Today's episode has been brought to you by Zapendo. Zapendo gives the power to manage contracts, edit them on the fly, send for e-signatures, manage expirations, alerts, and more. All unlimited. Try it today and get 15% off your first purchase. Just use coupon code VINCE1076. That's capital V, lowercase I-N-C-E, 1076. Hi there, my name is Vince Salerno, and welcome to the Vince Salerno Podcast. If you're looking for a place to get your weekly filmmaker fix, well, you've come to the right place. On this podcast, I discuss the latest in movie news, such as trailers, rumors, and more. I also discuss trends in the film industry and give my own insight as a filmmaker with special guests that are friends and film fans alike. So grab your popcorn and a nice cold drink, sit back and relax, because the Vince Salerno Podcast starts right now. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Vince Salerno Podcast, episode 59. Recording on this lovely Memorial Day weekend, wishing you all a happy Memorial Day. I'm sure you're going to be listening to this by the time Memorial Day has passed, so I hope you enjoy your time off. I hope you also take the time to reflect, honor, and thank those who made the ultimate sacrifice for our freedom, because that is the true purpose of the holiday. It's not just a free day off. It really is meant to be a time of reflection and thanks. So we have a great show for you guys today. We have a whole bunch of trailers that came out last week that I'd like to cover, which is going to take up most of our current events. And then for our topic of the week, I got to sit down with one of my good friends, a phenomenal filmmaker, and just recently released a great audio podcast called Project Foxtrot, Mary Pelchat. She will be here to discuss the show. She's super talented. We had a great conversation about Project Foxtrot and film and themes and story. And she even gave us, for those of you who are fans and know of Project Foxtrot, she gave us a little minor hints of what to expect for season two and possibly beyond. Okay, so let's get right into our current events. So again, like I said, we had at least, from what I can remember, four trailers that came out over the past week, 2 weeks maybe. The first trailer that came out Monday, I believe, is the first teaser trailer for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Now, this is, of course, the seventh installment in the Mission Impossible franchise. I am a huge fan of these movies. I loved Fallout. I love Ghost Protocol. Those are probably my two favorites in that order. The fourth film really did a great job of revitalizing the franchise, as it was kind of a dead franchise. There wasn't really much going on with it. And then the fifth film and subsequent films have just continued to raise the bar for this franchise and make it more than just a Tom Cruise spy vehicle franchise. It's become synonymous with high quality filmmaking, with in-camera stunts and choreography and action sequences, crazy dangerous situations in which Tom Cruise is hanging off buildings, hanging off planes, hanging off helicopters. And it seems the big stunt in this movie is going to be him driving a motorcycle off a cliff and parachuting, which, you know, we'll see how that goes. I don't know if that actually is the big stunt, but it seems like that's what the trailer was kind of hinting at. The big thing about this trailer is that it is supposed to be the swan song, the send-off for Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt. And you kind of get a vibe that this is going to get at the heart of what he's been fighting for, and if what he's been fighting for even exists, if it is a ideal that matters. I mean, these movies have done a great job of increasing, like, you know, the in some degrees philosophical means of good and evil. The bad guys in this movie seemingly have the power to control the very terms of right and wrong. Ethan Hunt has kind of been playing outside of those parameters, chasing a ideal that never existed, and he has to pick a side. I don't know what it means, but it's intriguing as hell. Now, the big The big thing to take away from this movie is that there seems to be a attempt to really bring the whole Mission Impossible franchise full circle, considering, I mean, you've seen old characters come back. Obviously, Ving Rhames has been in every single movie since the beginning. Obviously, Tom Cruise has been in every single movie. Michelle Monaghan, who was in Mission Impossible 3, most prominently, she appears as a cameo in Ghost Protocol, and she appeared in the last movie, Fallout, to kind of resolve and officially close that relationship, because Ethan Hunt seemed to have had, at least the way I took it, he had kind of still had a longing to be with her, even though, you know, he chose fighting the greater good over his, if you want to call it, selfish desires. Of course, it wasn't selfish. He wanted to get married. It was his wife. But then, you know, you find out that she's actually ends up being happy at the end of the movie. She's happy. She's moved on. And it allows him to move on and gives him peace with that. Well, this movie seems to be taking that in a huge direction by bringing Henry Cherney back. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. From the very first movie, I don't think we've seen him since Mission Impossible 1. I believe he was the former head of the IMF in the movie. Bringing him back to be the main villain, I assume, and really bring this franchise full circle. His inclusion in this movie is really exciting for longtime fans, and he is chilling. This guy is a phenomenal actor. I remember first seeing him in Mission Impossible. I remember seeing him in Clear and Present Danger, and he was chilling. Like, it's all in his eyes and in his face. He doesn't do much, but what he does is just, it's sinister. He's a very sinister guy in all these roles he plays, and you get that in almost every performance I've seen of his. The regulars are back. You have Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, Rebecca Ferguson, who it seems has committed to a full-blown relationship with Ethan Hunt in the movie. Vanessa Kirby, the White Widow from the previous film, she's coming back. As far as newcomers, a lot of intriguing newcomers. You have Palm Clementi, of course, who played Mantis in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Probably most intriguing new addition to the Mission Impossible franchise is one of my favorite actresses, Hayley Atwell. I'm really intrigued to see what she adds to this movie, if she herself is a romantic interest for Ethan Hunt, or if she's maybe like gonna be taking on the reins of this franchise, which honestly I wouldn't mind. I mean, Hayley Atwell's a great actress, and she's been able to handle franchise films really well. It's gonna be big, it's gonna be epic, it's gonna be an explosive two-part finale, it seems like, to Mission Impossible. Of course, we're just going off of the first movie. I'm in. I mean, like, I don't need to see anything else from this movie for another year. It's crazy that this movie is not coming out for another year and a month, I believe, like July 2023. And I like it when marketing campaigns really push themselves out to, like, go long distances until the release. I don't like these six-month marketing windows. I just think it takes away from the fun, the buildup. I like that, like, okay, we have this one trailer to go off of until they decide to release the next trailer in maybe 6 months or, I don't know, 5 months from the movie's release. To move on to another trailer that came out this week, we have the Thor Love and Thunder trailer, which premiered during Monday Night Basketball, the finals. I tried to stick around and watch it, but I got bored, so I just decided, you know what, it's gonna go online. I'm fine with that. I'm conflicted about Thor Love and Thunder. I think it looks like a great movie, but there are a lot of worries about Marvel going woke with this movie and other films, and I'm not a fan of wokeism in my movies. I think it ruins everything. You know, the term get woke, get broke. Well, I think it's true. And if there's going to be some, there's rumors of like LGBT stuff in this movie, like Thor might be into guys and girls. Valkyrie having a girlfriend, possibly Captain Marvel, or having a queen, and you know, she's a king, apparently. She's king of Asgard, which, I'm sorry, like, there's nothing wrong with calling her queen. There's nothing wrong with that. Why do we need to call her King Valkyrie because, oh, she's the man of the relationship. I don't know. It's stupid. It's really stupid. She's a queen. You don't need a king. She can be a queen. It's fine. It's honestly fine. King Valkyrie, it's stupid. But this movie, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I like the different outfits Thor has in the movie. Of course, the big thing is Jane Foster is coming back, but she is going to be Lady Thor, or as they refer to her, Mighty Thor, which again is a stupid thing. It's like, she's not Thor. Thor is a name. Thor is not a title. Why not call her something else? Honestly, I'm calling her Mighty Jane because I think that's just a cooler name. I mean, why do you want to even just like, oh, she's just Thor, but she's a woman. Mighty Jane sounds way cooler, in my opinion. The Mighty Thor and the Mighty Jane. Mighty Thor and Jane. It sounds way better than, oh, she's just the Mighty Thor. I don't know. I don't know why people want to replace men and women roles in these movies, but it seems like Marvel's on a track record to replace all the male roles with females, well, except for Captain America, I suppose, unless they get rid of Sam Wilson and replace him with Captain Britain or Captain Carter. Not that I wouldn't mind that per se, but I don't know. I just, the MCU is heading in a weird direction, and I'm very skeptical with every movie and every show I watch. Moon Knight was not that great. In fact, it kind of got worse as it went on, in my opinion. Hawkeye was very disappointing. Although it was good, it was disappointing. Doctor Strange, I think, is a great movie. I don't think it's the best Doctor Strange film. I don't think it was perfect, but I really liked it. Thor Love and Thunder, I'm very skeptical going into, even though there's a lot to look forward to. So, but that's my unfiltered opinion. But I do like the idea that they're bringing back Thor and Jane and revisiting their relationship. And if there is a chance that they can, you know, be in love again. Christian Bale as Gore the God Butcher, man, that dude looks terrifying. This movie looks like it's taking Hela and just cranking it up to like 115, because Hela was a terrible villain. I'm sorry, but like, you introduce the banished sister of Thor, and she just is the mustache twirling, I want to destroy everything because I'm angry villain. And like, there was no like weight to her emotion, like family background and stuff. I think she was underserved. No disrespect to Cate Blanchett. I think she was great, but I just didn't like what they did with the character. But Christian Bale looks to be a step in the right direction as far as villains go. Taika Waititi thinks he's the best villain in the MCU, which, you know, might sound biased, but, you know, honestly, after looking at him, I'm inclined to believe by the end of this movie, we could be saying Gore the God Butcher is the best MCU villain, next to Thanos maybe, and next to Loki. It's definitely possible. There's a lot of death that's probably going to happen in this. Gods are going to die. There's this giant cat creature that's been slaughtered, assumedly by Gore. There's a really fun sequence that takes place on Olympus, apparently. We meet Zeus, who's played by Russell Crowe. Come on, Russell Crowe playing Zeus. He's probably going to die, which sucks. But no, it looks fun. And I like that the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be in it too. I like that they're going to again be exploring Thor and Jane's relationship further, and that, you know, this doesn't really give me vibe that they're going to replace Thor per se. I mean I don't care if there's two Thors running around the MCU. I mean, again, she's not Thor, she's Jane with Thor's powers, but whatever. I digress. If this is, I mean, because I don't think Chris Hemsworth is leaving the MCU at any point. I think this is only the beginning of his journey in the MCU. So if they keep it going with him, and Jane Foster's there too as Mighty Jane, hey, more power to him. I'd love to see if Chris Hemsworth is the only OG character that sticks around for another 10 years, I will be happy. I'll be really happy. I don't want us to just kind of dissolve all of the old heroes just because we need to make room for other heroes. And honestly, all these new heroes, I don't think are jiving the way Marvel is expecting them to. Like, I can't speak for Miss Marvel. I know she's very popular, but it seems like they're introducing a lot of heroes that in the comics didn't really perform very well, which is interesting. The one thing I'm looking forward to, which we'll talk about in a bit, is She-Hulk. I grew up on She-Hulk comics. I'd love the character She-Hulk. I mean, what guy doesn't love She-Hulk, honestly? But I can't wait for the show. It looks really fun, but we'll explore that trailer in a bit. But as far as Thor Love and Thunder goes, I'm skeptical. I'm not even sure if I'm going to go see this in the theater. That's how skeptical I am. There is a lot of good to pull from this. I think it is, at the end of the day, going to be a good movie. And I think I had my issues with Ragnarok because it was a apocalyptic dark story that Taika Waititi did not take seriously. And that's his point of view. Totally fine with that. But I think I'm glad that he gets to create his own story from the ground up that I think will be, I think I will enjoy a lot more than having a predetermined story by Marvel and then seeing him having to fit his vision into that story. I like that this is going to be his vision from the ground up. All right, next on the docket, let's talk about the second trailer for Elvis, the latest film from Baz Luhrmann, and the first major biopic of the actor, as far as I know, at least. Austin Butler playing Elvis, Tom Hanks playing Colonel Parker, his manager. I don't know too much about Elvis's backstory. I went to Graceland for a vacation when I was a little kid, and I just remember going through this insane mansion and just being like, who the heck was this guy? I've done some research since this trailer came out about Elvis, because I do love Elvis. I love his music. I'm a big fan. Just didn't know much about his backstory. I watched a really funny documentary. It was kind of a spoof documentary about, like, what if Elvis was actually, like, not dead, but like an undercover agent in the FBI. My only real criticism of the trailer is Baz Luhrmann always seems to want to inject his movies and his trailers with rap and pop songs, which I just don't like. This trailer, like, inserts a random rap song halfway through, and I'm just like, okay, now I'm out of the world of Elvis. But this movie does a really great job of setting you in the 60s, the sort of hyper-realistic world of Elvis, and getting you in the mindset of what people were thinking, parents, kids, Elvis himself, and his upbringing. It's a kind of movie that I don't really know much about, don't really want to know much about until going into. So, you know, I watched the trailers just to keep up with cool visuals and stuff. Also to see Tom Hanks and those crazy prosthetics. Yeah, Tom Hanks plays kind of the villain of the story, Colonel Parker, who was kind of a seemingly brutal, mysterious manager of Elvis. He's almost unrecognizable in this movie, which is crazy. I never thought in a million years you would cast Tom Hanks in an Elvis movie, but lo and behold, here we are. There's some stuff in the beginning where it's like Elvis as a kid, and he's in a like a worship tent or something, and it looks like he's in a trance or something because he's like jiving to the music. A little weird. Some of the stuff in this trailer is a little weird, and I don't know if it's actually. So we'll see. This movie doesn't look like it's going to be one to worry about as far as wokeness goes. I mean, it's Elvis Presley. He was a real macho man, so I don't know how woke you can get with an Elvis movie. But all I can really say is just I'm excited for this movie. It looks visually interesting. It looks like it's going to explore all different caveats of Elvis's life, all different phases of Elvis's life, to which I say, let's go. But I'm really excited for this film. I've been looking forward to this film for a long time, ever since they announced they were making an Elvis biopic. And Austin Butler is kind of a recent newcomer, ever since he was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And he seems to be killing this role. Like, ever since the first trailer, I just saw, like, this guy, like, he doesn't look exactly like Elvis. I mean, when you get the prosthetics and the hair on, like, yeah. But he has got the vibe. He's got the attitude. He's got the voice down. He just exudes Elvis. And props to him. What a great actor. Final trailer I want to talk about is, I think this came out 2 weeks ago, but nevertheless deserves to be discussed, is the She-Hulk trailer. The show has been in development since 2019, 2020, I think. It's gotten several title graphic redesigns, funny enough, and now it's gotten a title change, so it's no longer just She-Hulk. It's She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, which I think is kind of fun. And I've heard rumors that this show has been kind of a mess behind the scenes, but I see this trailer, and it looks fun. It just looks like a good time. You get the inclusion of a brand new hero. You get Mark Ruffalo's Bruce Banner, the Hulk, returning. He might be going through his own changes and stuff with switching back between Bruce and Hulk mode. I don't know if this is going to be a passing the torch per se. All I know is I grew up on She-Hulk comics. I mean, who doesn't love She-Hulk? In addition to Emil Blonsky, the Abomination being in this, making his grand return since Shang-Chi, I should say. Charlie Cox's Daredevil coming in. You have Jameel Jamel's character. I guess she's a popular character in the comics. I don't know much about her, but she's in it. Frogman, who I just know because I've seen him in action figures, but Frogman's in the show apparently, so that's pretty wild. Yeah, and a big thing, Charlie Cox's Daredevil's rumored to be in this. He's going to be making several other appearances before finally appearing in his own Daredevil series on Disney Plus, which is really exciting, and I can't wait for that. I wonder how they're going to address the Netflix show, how they're going to integrate into the Netflix show, or if they're going to just do a hard reboot. I mean, they really shouldn't, because they got those actors back. Why would they waste all that great story and make it not canon and make it part of their origin? The big controversy with this is obviously the CGI kind of looks terrible, at least compared to Mark Ruffalo's. Mark Ruffalo, who has played the role several times, his model is probably pretty well built out, and it's easy to drag and drop in there in design. She-Hulk looks like, people have joked that she looks like a Sims character. I would have to agree. She does look like a Sims character. I'm sure they'll fix it. The show is like 2 months out. They've been working on it for a long time. I am sure the CGI is going to improve. At least I hope it improves. If it doesn't, that really is going to be... it's just going to add to further controversy for this show. So, I assume this is going to be fixed. I'm not too concerned. This is kind of typical of most movies and shows, but it does make me concerned about effects in general with Marvel and the volume of content they are producing. They have like 5 or 6 shows coming out every year, 3 or 4 movies coming out every year, and the effects vary from great to okay/bad. Because I think of the volume of stuff that they're producing, and I think it'd be wise for them to slow it down a bit. And I love the MCU. I love the Marvel content that we're getting, is some of it, at least some of it is suffering from wokeism, as stereotypical and as weird as some people say, I think it's true. The MCU it's suffering from a little bit of that effect. Look, I say quality over quantity. I don't want 20 MCU shows coming out in 1 year if they're all going to have horrible CGI in them, or if they're all going to be bare minimum, bar none, superhero shows. Like, really put in the money, the resources to make 1 or 2 or 3, heck even 3, really great, awesome shows a year. Like, you had Loki and WandaVision, which were great shows, great special effects, I think. Moon Knight, some of the effects in those shows, like the transformation to Moon Knight from Oscar Isaac, looked horrible. And I mean, this is kind of that same weird, uncanny valley. So I really do hope the effects change. I mean, there are some shots that look great. You can see Tatiana Maslany in them. There are some shots that definitely need work. But I think I will say, let me comment on Tatiana Maslany playing She-Hulk. Not my first choice, but I think she's going to nail it. She definitely, obviously, with the Orphan Black series, she has been able to show a wide range of playing different characters, and it seems like her She-Hulk persona and her Jennifer Walters persona are kind of different from each other. I think she looks great as the character. The CGI just needs work. So yeah, there's not too much Marvel content coming out that I'm really excited about, but hopefully She-Hulk is a good one and does not suffer from any crazy woke crap. Okay, so I mean, that's pretty much it. Those are all the trailers I wanted to discuss. I know that as I'm recording this, we're in the weekend of Star Wars Celebration. A lot of great stuff came out for Star Wars Celebration. A lot of confusing things and some disappointing things came out for Star Wars Celebration. I want to talk about it in the next episode, so expect that episode to be coming out in the next couple weeks. It's talking about Star Wars Celebration, everything regarding the future of the Star Wars universe, and honestly, just Lucasfilm in general. But now I want to transition onto our topic of the week, where I discuss with the incredible Mary Pelchat, Project Foxtrot. For those of you who don't know, Project Foxtrot is a audio drama podcast available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all sorts of platforms. And it is a phenomenal show. It is produced by Mary Pelchat and one of my best friends, JJ Schindler. It stars another one of my best friends, Shelby Turner. It stars a lot of great people from my alma mater, JP Catholic, that I know. And I believe they've been working on this for several years now to get this show to where it is today to get released. And I have just, I don't watch, listen to a lot of audio dramas, but this one, and I'm a little biased because these are my friends working on this, but every episode, like one right after the other, was just like so enticing. It just wanted to keep going and keep going. And then when it ends, you want more. Oh man, I wanted so much more when it ended. But it's a detective drama sci-fi series about a missing young boy who mysteriously pops up after all these years, and this detective and this local police chief in the small town investigate where he came from and if there are other missing children connected to his reemergence. And there are some explanations to the situation that are not necessarily of our reality. I'll just say it like that. You just got to check it out yourself. Mary gives a great plot synopsis of the show in our interview. But yeah, I won't say anymore. Let's just cut right into my interview with head writer, director, and producer Mary Pelchat and our discussion of her podcast, Project Foxtrot. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today I have a very special guest joining the podcast today. She's a good friend of mine. We've known each other for a long time. She's one of the most talented writers and directors that I know. And she's here today to talk about this amazing new audio drama podcast she's made called Project Foxtrot. It's Mary Pelchat.
Hi, thank you. Oh my gosh, what a wonderful introduction.
I mean, it's true. I mean, yeah, I feel like we've known each other for a long time, and I've never
known you. Almost 10 years.
Oh my gosh, has it almost been 10 years?
Yeah.
Gosh, I feel really old thinking about college being so long ago. Like it is almost 10 years. 2024, and oh my gosh. Yeah, we're not gonna walk down that existential crisis. Anyways, Mary, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar with you or your work, just give us a little teaser about who you are, what you do, and that.
Okay. So I'm a creative based in San Diego. I've worked on a couple of features. I do a lot of writing and producing and directing of independent content. But this was Project Foxtrot is probably my biggest piece to date. Doing radio theater, I had never done anything like that before. So it was really a good test of of my writing and directing, but also just like just trying out skills in a different way. So.
Sure. Well, I mean, again, for as long as I've known you, I feel like you've always been up to the challenge of pushing yourself more and more with everything you've done. I feel like I can't remember the first thing I was on with you as a director, or even just as an actress, I think. I know you always had a knack of tackling very dark themes, dark subject matter. It's like that was kind of your POV in college.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think that's
POV in college. Being, yeah, but you've always tackled it really, really well. I think better than most in our class. And I feel like, you've always been able to challenge yourself with each project. So when I heard that you were doing this, I was like, oh, well, obviously she's gonna nail it.
Oh, thank you.
And you did.
I wasn't just me. This was a sure. huge collaborative project. I had so much help on the project. Just at various points, people would just pop in and they would like take something off my plate. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I love you. You're so helpful.
So, was it, I guess maybe with the first question that just kind of came off the top of my head, in college, a lot of times you have to kind of wear multiple hats to get things mm-hmm. done. And it seems like you did a little bit of that with this show, with people coming on, either if you brought them on from the beginning or if they came on the last minute, mm-hmm. was it easy to relinquish those duties, or was it kind of hard to give it to someone else?
I've always been under the mindset of my first priority when working on any project is the good of the story. Mm-hmm. So I always try to operate of, so that is my goal, is like to make the best story possible. And I know that I'm not the best at everything. I know that I'm definitely not the most qualified. So I love it when someone else can bring something to the table, like whether that be a new perspective or they challenge me on something that, you know, I thought should go this way. And then they'd be like, no, Mary, you're an idiot. It should be this way, you know, and they'd be like, because of X, Y, and Z. I'm like, oh, you're right. That's great. So I always try to really be open to other perspectives or other working with other professionals. Like, yeah, you've studied this way more than I have. Please, you know, give
take it off my shoulders.
I love that. I love taking other people's skills because, you know, I'm not the best at producing, or, you know, there's like other things, or even with writing and working collaboratively, like mm-hmm. I'm just using the best idea I have. It may not be the best idea, you know? And so that's always what I'm hunting for when I'm creating. And so for me, I try to avoid conflict as much as possible of like, I need to do this and it has to be my way. And no, but that's just not how I work.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool. That's kind of how I work too. I mean, if you're not going to take the best idea simply because it wasn't your idea, like you're going to crash and burn. Like, it's just simple. Yeah. As that. If you're not serving the story and you're doing what's best for the story, you know, that's not what art is about. It is a collaborative medium. Even as a director, like, you are not just directing the story, you're directing every single department and every head of that department. You know, you are the driving force, but, you know, all those pieces can't come together without a team. So
yeah. When you're putting a team together, you're trying to find people who are experts and balance out your weaknesses, you know, mm-hmm. so they're bringing in something different anyways.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's get into it. So I guess for those maybe who don't know what Project Foxtrot is, do you want to give them a little like a little log line or synopsis of what Project Foxtrot sure. is about?
So Project Foxtrot is a audio drama. So it is the narrative telling without a narrator. Narrative telling of a story about a sci-fi drama about a boy who after 5 years missing, reappears in this small town, and we start to see the cracks of something deeper and more sinister going on that it could affect everybody.
Wild. I feel like that's a very apt description. So where did this idea come from?
So it's kind of funny, but one of our other classmates, Elliot Miser, he approached me probably about like 9 months after I graduated and was like, Mary, no one is making anything and audio dramas are the way to go. He was like, he's the one who sold me on it. He was like, they're like really cheap. We can do whatever we want and we should just start making content. He was like, can you pitch me a few ideas? And I came up with three ideas and I pitched him all of them. And we both really liked this idea. And so he was like, I want to do traditional writer's room and that kind of thing. And I was like, awesome, great. And so that's when I got together with Gabe and Miley, Miley Durbin, and we started developing the show. And then I think we were like a couple months into it, and then Netflix dropped this show called Dark. And I remember being, I didn't even watch the show. I think someone explained it to me, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's the show that we're making. Like, that's like, you know, I was so crushed by the idea that like this show Dark was had stolen my idea. That I was so mad I didn't watch it. We shelved the idea for a year, and I finally watched Dark like 6 months later, and I was like, oh, this is nothing like our project. Our product is totally different. Also, we're in like a totally different medium, and no matter what we do, our story is going to be significantly different. And there's certain things about like sci-fi where it's like sci-fi is the genre, but there's like subgenres of sci-fi, you know, that certain stories fall into. And so I had like mistaken this genre for, you know, the concept. So I was like, you know what? I had a sit down with a dear friend of mine, and he was like, Mary, if you're not making what you want to do, how is anyone going to know that that's what you want to be doing? And so I was like, you're right. And I was like, Elliot was onto something. And so that's when I took back out, Foxtrot. It had a different name at the time, actually. And, I wrote a pilot, cause we didn't have a pilot at the time when we first developed the show. Okay. We just had a bunch of note cards. I think I still have them actually.
Oh.
yeah, I kept them. So I wrote the pilot, I put together a pitch Bible, and then I sent it around to, I went back to Miley Durbin and Game War, and then I went to James Powers. There was another writer I talked to, but it didn't end up working out. And I gave them my pitch deck, and I was like, here's the pilot. And we just hit the ground running. And, you know, that's when we started writing episodes. And, you know, the other team kind of came together, JJ Schindler and then Brian Harner, our composer. Mm-hmm. And that's how they came onto that project. And then, you know, we recorded probably like 9 months after that. So
wow.
Yeah.
Dynamite story. what was the original title?
It had like a horrible placeholder name and huge spoilers, but
Oh, okay. Well, we'll refrain from that. We'll refrain from that until we review season.
I have a habit of until I give a project an actual like name, like till I actually name something, I just give it a placeholder name. Mm-hmm. So I know what the project is when I'm looking through folders. So I'd be like, oh, okay, that's this project. Cause we didn't name Project Foxtrot till, oh, like months in. So.
Interesting. Well, I will remember to ask you that question once the story is further fleshed out. Maybe that is not a spoiler anymore.
It won't be a spoiler after season two. So
after season, okay. So we may have a while to wait. All right. So I mean, we talked about this earlier, but you have a really phenomenal cast and crew. I mean, you just mentioned Gabe Moore, Miley Durbin, James Powers, JJ Schindler producing, Shelby Turner, Diasik Burna, I believe his name is.
Yeah. Oh, he's amazing. I love him. I love him.
There's so many
very talented,
extremely talented people on this project. Ryan Harner, you mentioned doing music. Ryan's a great guy, a great, mm-hmm. great artist.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah. And you did mention that some of those people came on later in the process, but. Mm-hmm. How did you go about assembling this team, both cast and crew? And I guess specifically on the crew, the cast, what stuck out about Shelby's performance and Diasik's performance that decided like this is Peggy Parker. This is, I believe his name is Sheriff Graves, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Chief, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chief, sorry.
Rick Graves. So cast.
You kind of unloaded a lot on you in there, but
that's okay.
First question, what how did you assemble the people that you assembled? And then with the actors, what made you cast those actors in those roles? What made you think this is that character?
Okay. So for crew, I worked a lot with, I went back to a lot of people who I had worked with in the past. You know, people who I knew I created really well with. You know, we bounced ideas off of each other. I don't think I had worked with James before, but I knew that James and I had always, I think we had like vaguely worked on like peripheral on projects before. And I just liked his working style and I really loved his writing style. And I knew that he really loved sci-fi. So, he was such a natural choice for it. So I pulled on a lot of people that I'd worked with before, and then as far as casting went, we did do a casting call. JJ did a lot of my casting. Marielle Cuccinelli did some casting too. Because we had a cast of I think there were over 40 voice characters. Wow. And that was after and then I went back and combined or cut out characters because it was too many. Mm-hmm. So we had over 40 characters to cast for and 4 days of recording to do it in. What's really interesting about casting for a podcast or, you know, any kind of audio based thing is that you don't have any visual cues to attach to a character. Sometimes in like TV shows or movies, they'll like, you know, you'll see an actress and, you know, she'll always be in the same color. She'll have the same hairstyle. You could hear her and see her, and so the characters are just very recognizable visually. But in an audio format, one of the biggest struggles and the thing I tried to pay the attention to the most was making sure that everybody had a very distinct voice for their character and making sure that they were going to mesh well with everyone else in every single scene in the show. Mm-hmm. So for casting for like Peggy Parker, she's the most difficult to cast for because she was in so many scenes. And so it was making sure that, you know, even though there were a few actresses I liked for that role, it mattered of who they were going to be reading against. And so I was like, okay, so I can't cast this one because she sounds too much like this other role. And so there was a huge element of casting that just came down to how do people sound together? You know, and mm-hmm. I would just play videos back and forth on my computer listening to, or they're like the audio clips, listening to the different voices and how they sounded together. I don't remember casting Diasek that much. I remember our first phone call, but he was such a natural. Mm-hmm. And then for Shelby, she read for Mara and for Peggy. And I remember like, I really loved her performance when she read for Mara for Peggy. So that was how she ended up getting casted that way.
Interesting. So she read for Mara, but that fit Peggy better?
Yeah, because I casted Mara's role first. Ella Negri, I guess Ella Matthews now. Ella Matthews. She was casted as, I casted her as Mara first.
Mm-hmm.
And so then in casting Peggy, you know, then went back and casted Peggy.
I have to say, I do think a lot of your voices, the people you cast, they do have the benefit of sounding very, very distinct. And that's not just because I know half of them.
I think that might help a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure it definitely did. But even like not, I mean, I actually didn't know it was Ella until like you hear the end where you're announcing the cast at the end. I was like, oh my gosh, that was Ella Matthews. No way.
Oh yeah.
So I think, yeah, that was a great choice to go for trying to differentiate the roles with how they sound, because that does play a big part. I mean, when you're dealing with audio, I'm sure it really matters what you're hearing and how you hear it. Makes a big difference, because you don't have the benefit of benefit of visual.
It's something you don't even think about. It's really funny. Mm-hmm. You know, just like listening to someone's voice and not like, you know, like, oh, I need to be able to recognize them from scene to scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Shelby, I've worked with Shelby a handful of times, and she has this dedication as an actress that you don't see in a lot of people. But she knows how to really entrench herself in a character, even when it's just sounds like normal Shelby Turner. Like, I didn't just think, oh, this is Shelby playing a part. I could hear, like, oh, this is Peggy Parker, not Shelby Turner. So that's a tribute really to her acting and your directing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, she was fantastic to work with.
Mm-hmm. So this is, like we said, this is a very heavy, mature show. It mm-hmm. tackles a lot of very emotional themes. So thematically, what were you guys trying to tackle? What were you guys trying to say with Project Foxtrot, if anything?
I think one of the biggest pieces was, and it's interesting now to talk about it because only one part is out. The plan is for three, is that we were focusing on the arc of the overall show, certainly thematically. So there's, you know, so there's things where it's, you know, so a lot of our themes are tied up into like Peggy's growth, which we don't like fully see yet in this season. Mm-hmm. But I think we were really intrigued by, it's been so long. We wrote this back in 2018.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been a while.
That's what I've heard about from everybody. It's just like, yeah, we've been working on this for such a long time and now it's finally here.
Yeah. I wrote the pilot in 2018. I think that was it. But I think we really wanted to explore ideas of, you know, of like of what cost when approached, like, when chasing a goal, I guess would say, mm-hmm. you know, as that carries over thematically of, you know, of how we see that with Rick and how he's interacting with people. Mm-hmm. We see that with Dr. Bigelow and how in his approach of, you know, we must go where the science leads us. And so there's this idea of following things to the greatest conclusion and we're questioning whether or not you should.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. I didn't think about that when listening to it, but just hearing you talk about it, it's like it kind of makes sense. It's like what answers are you hoping to find? And then if you do find the answers, is it worth the pursuit?
Worth the cost, yeah.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. I don't feel like a lot of shows cover that kind of pursuit of a goal in that way. It's mm-hmm. it's almost a I'm speaking as not knowing anything except for what I've seen from the or what I've listened to mm-hmm. rather from the first eight episodes. Yeah. But that's a very interesting theme. Kind of on the topic of themes, I noticed a very interesting duality between Peggy and Rick, mm-hmm. and the fact that she's kind of this big city detective and he's this small town police chief. And I think there's an interesting duality between the two of them and the way they both operate. Is there any kind of thought into that of like the differences between the two and how they eventually come together at the very end?
We really wanted to create a lot of like as much conflict as possible in terms of like I think that like they both have trust issues in a different way. We're like, okay, how can we capitalize on this? In the first version of the story, I don't think Rick existed. Peggy was small town, like, you know, she was the one following everything. And so instead we wanted to create someone who, you know, they're ultimately, you know, we find out that they're working towards the same goal, but we wanted someone who would really bring out different elements in each other's characters and slowly through their conflicts reveal things about each other that we wouldn't normally get if they weren't kind of opposite and in conflict with one another. You know, we were questioning, you know, Rick's involvement with things, questioning, you know, that kind of thing.
Got it. Yeah. It was really rewarding, I think, to hear them come together at the end and both of them kind of come clean about things that they had been keeping from one another. And of course, you know, the show kind of leaves off on a cliffhanger, but basically almost with the potential promise that relationship is going to grow from this point, that like that this is, you know, they've come together and now hopefully there's nowhere to go but up as far as their relationship.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're saying that.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know anything, but, you know, I'm hopefully optimistic for their odds of happiness in the next couple seasons. We'll see.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you mentioned this is a detective show. It's a sci-fi show.
Yeah.
What inspirations, what media, you know, what existing art, if anything, I mean, you mentioned the show Dark, but what else contributed to the inspiration of this idea and the style and the vibe you guys are trying to convey through just audio?
So this story particularly was when I first developed, it changed after we developed it, but in my initial pitch and in my initial pilot, I decided that I was going to write my love story to where I grew up. You know, I wanted to incorporate, you know, I grew up in backwoods, Northeast. And so I wanted to have that element there. I grew up watching mysteries, you know, with my family, murder mysteries, a huge love of sci-fi. And so it was like, this idea was like, I'm just going to capitalize on everything that I love about these stories and these elements. And that was, you know, that was influenced a lot of like my early inspirations. Stranger Things was a huge influence. There was, you know, I think that there was, I think that was like a big one. Trying to think.
Was there any I would get a Twilight Zone vibe from the opening. Is that at all an inspiration?
It's hard to say when you're pulling on some of your favorite genres, like what specifically inspired things. So I grew up on Twilight Zone, and like other really random shows, like I'm sure no one's heard of Eerie, Indiana, but it's hard to say like, oh yeah, that inspired this. You know, we took an inspiration from a lot of different places. And especially with working with a full team, like I can say like, yeah, when I walked in, you know, these were my inspirations. You know, and I think that, but there was also things where it was like, you know, we'd have writing meetings and I would write down a list of different movies and shows that James or Miley or, you know, Gabe would bring up that they were like, oh, like this is like this, you know. And so we were constantly educating each other. There's a documentary called Three Identical Strangers.
Yes, I've heard of that one.
So oddly enough, like that one came into play and that was something we all went out and watched. I think it was Gabe's recommendation. And you know, that ended up playing with different elements. Mm-hmm. There were, you know, there's like some Russian conspiracy theories that I pulled from. It was really, when you're doing a project that's really this large and in a medium that we hadn't really worked in before, and kind of crossing a few different genres. I think like I'm really influenced a lot by like Gillian Flynn's writing, especially when it comes to like mystery, like that kind of the drama kind of
thing. Yeah, she's really good.
She's phenomenal. You know, so I think like that played like some influences there. You know, so it's one of those things where you start the project and it looks one way, and then as you're going, there's changes we made because of the format or because we realized it wouldn't work, and so you're constantly bringing in new inspiration. True Detective was another big influence. So you know, just constantly, you're constantly keeping yourself in the headspace of the story, so you're constantly bringing in new inspiration all the time. Exclusively like only watched sci-fi and like mystery stories for like 2 years while making this project, so I was always in that like mind space and always trying to like bring in new ideas or new perspectives, or you know, trying something else out that someone else had done, or you know, that kind of thing. And you're trying to like maintain this balancing act of like, all right, I'm just gonna like keep this headspace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I think whoa, something just popped up. I think the combination of everything you guys contributed definitely makes it feel original for sure. Oh shoot, did you hear that?
I heard a tap or something.
Okay, my computer just froze, so it's okay now. Okay. What I was saying. Yeah, I feel like with all those inspirations you mentioned, it still felt like its own thing. Like I didn't really think, oh, this feels kind of like this or kind of like that. It still felt like, okay, this is Project Foxtrot. Yes, I may feel like, oh, this feels like it's from Twilight Zone. This is from Stranger Things or True Detective or whatever, but it still felt like its own thing, which I think is a credit to the influx of ideas and inspiration you guys did pour into this.
That's great. That's what we want.
All right. Just a couple more questions. I know you and I are both on a tight schedule. So I talked to some of the writers, I think I mentioned this to you too, but some of the things you guys pulled from this were kind of real factual things that you guys took inspiration from. Some of it was stuff that you guys made out of fiction. What elements were kind of based in real facts and real in reality that made up the story, and what was kind of the more fictional sci-fi aspect that you guys were trying to tackle?
There's actually, we did a ton of research, so it was kind of like we were real when we could, as far as we could go. We were very real. Hours and hours of research. There's a paragraph in episode 8 that I spent 3 hours on for 2 sentences of just the amount of research that went into how to accurately, it was some medical jargon. So like there was a lot of it of that. I worked in a medical office for almost 2 years. So I would pull from that when we decided to focus a lot with Alzheimer's and that kind of diseases. My boss at the time was a doctor. I was working, he handed me like this giant research book on it. And it was like, it was good and bad, because I had done like some peripheral research on, you know, on how those things worked. And then there was something we had done in the show, I don't remember what it was, but I was like, oh, this, like, there's like a couple of parts where I'm like, this isn't totally scientifically possible, but that's fine.
Yeah.
like, I think that when they talk about memories, it's Dr. Bigelow, there's a recording of Dr. Bigelow in one of the episodes, and
that's Gabe's character, right?
Yeah, Gabe Moore voices Dr. Bigelow. And then James Powers actually interviews him. It was really
funny. That's right, yeah.
but they're talking about how memory is like a cassette tape that you can just record over. That's not true. That is not how it works. And so there's things like that, or, you know, like Alzheimer's has a cure actually. You know, and so it's like, well, okay, that's fine. There's things like that where just like little bits, but, you know, and then there's like, there's a huge conversation that, cause I think there's like a normal amount of research for any show that you have to do, especially like a procedural detective, kind of show. There's definitely like certain levels. Like I interviewed, a detective in the homicide department in San Diego. So I had like a 2-hour interview with him for research. So there's like normal stuff. And then there's stuff like, there's a big conversation with Dr. Bergsman and Rick in episode, I think it's episode 5. I know Gabe Moore wrote that episode, and I know he did a ton of research on that. We listened to different podcast episodes. There was just like a lot of, we tried to pull as much from reality as possible. I always take the philosophy of like, when you're doing a sci-fi like this, you want to go as far as you can with current medical science. I always just, it's just my personal preference. I always think it sounds best. And even if you kind of deviate from that, it'll still inform your writing in other ways, as opposed to like specifics of things. And I think it just helps everything to sound more real and more cohesive, the more you can lean on reality.
Cool. Yeah. I was really, invested in those very, the medical based conversations, like with Gabe's character on the recording. It's interesting that the idea that, yeah, like a tape, like a memory is like a cassette tape that you can record over. I think that's just a really, really fun analogy for this particular project.
Mm-hmm.
My final question for you is, I know you probably can't say too much because obviously mm-hmm. there's a lot in store, apparently 2 more seasons worth, but what is in store? What can you tell us, if anything, about what's next for Project Foxtrot?
There's definitely gonna be more. More of Peggy and Mara and Chief Rick Graves and Blake, exploring more of, you know, we had the huge reveal at the end of like confirmation that, you know, weird stuff really is going on, and that it's mm-hmm. a lot more serious than we thought. So I think they'll just be like a I don't want to say too much.
Sure. I know the ending was frustrating and exhilarating for me, because I was like, oh my gosh, that's it.
Good.
you got us hooked.
Good.
Yeah, well, I would love to talk to you for like another 30 minutes if we could.
I have 4 years worth of things to talk about.
We'll have to have you come back on the show very soon and talk about Project Foxtrot and other stuff. I'd love to get your insight. I mean, I know your insight, but I'm sure other people would love to hear your insight on movies and writing and directing and all the great stuff you do.
Well, thank you. That would be so much fun.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Mary, thank you so much for being on the Vince Lino podcast. We'll definitely have you back very soon. And if people want to follow updates on Project Foxtrot or just follow you on social media, where can they find all that?
Project Foxtrot is just Project Foxtrot Podcast. So we have the projectfoxtrotpodcast.com. It's our website. And then we have an Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. So if you just search Project Foxtrot Podcast, we'll show up.
All righty, cool. Well, Mary, thanks again for
Thank you for having me. This was fantastic.
Oh, again, I'd love to talk to you more, but I know we both got places to be. So we'll have you on soon.
All right, sounds great. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, so that's how it went down, guys. Please follow Mary Pelchat. Please follow Project Foxtrot. I'll link the social media accounts in the description of this podcast episode. Again, she's a phenomenal talent. She is a phenomenal person. I just can't say enough good things about her as an artist. She's really great, and I'm so happy for her and the whole cast and crew of Project Foxtrot, and I impatiently await with all due respect, I impatiently await season 2 and beyond. And that's how we're going to wrap this up, guys. So thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Vince Salerno Podcast. I know we've been gone for a while, and after this, the next episode that I release for the Star Wars celebration, I'll be gone because I'm getting married. So I'm really excited about that, but that obviously means I will not be able to give you any new content. And if I can squeeze in another episode or two between now and end of July, mid-July, I'll see what I can do. But until then, I don't want to keep people waiting and thinking I'm going to be releasing new episodes. If you want to follow me on social media, you can follow me at Official Vince Salerno. I'll follow me on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter at TheBigV75. And we will see you guys next time. Thanks for listening. God bless and peace out.